So thanks for joining. We've been chatting on some pretty cool ideas of things that you're up to with creating digital and virtual experiences. Do you want to share a little bit about like what you've done in creating in-person events and how that's bringing into this new innovation world of virtual and digital events?
My name is Bunny Holmes. I have been producing an independent circus company for the last 10 years, both on stage and off stage, being involved in kind of every aspect of it, but primarily directing. And outside of that, I throw dance parties. I have some associates I do pretty large scale dance events with. Our last Halloween party was substantial, about 1,000 people at it. And I just love throwing parties and events. And so naturally, now it's like trying to find a way to satisfy that need to connect with people in groups and form community and meet new people has been mine and I'm sure many other people's project of the month.
I think it's so interesting to me of, especially in that of building, kind of bringing that aspect of live entertainment to this new space that we're creating things in. I think a lot of people are trying to do their show, whether it's a circus show or a juggling show or a magic show, they're trying to do their show on a webcam. And it's like sometimes just not translating very well and people are getting frustrated. I think the performers and the audience are getting frustrated. So what does that look like to you as far as like you're not doing a circus show? You're not trying to do a circus show on a webcam.
Well, it's funny because actually I have a couple of projects right now and one of them is a circus show. But what I'm trying to do...
So double down on that. So how does that be different than a circus show that you would do in a normal, quote, normal, traditional live setting?
We're still trying to figure out how to make the circus show translate, because what you're delivering ultimately is an incredibly different experience than you could have in person. And so... my main creative focus, whether I'm working on the party, which is most of what we're here to talk about, or a circus show, is to, instead of trying to replicate the live experience and then get frustrated with the fact that you can't, look at things that you can do online that you could not do in person and then focus on developing those.
And that's huge. That's like, it sounds obvious when you say it that concisely. And it's like, oh, we actually, a lot of people are looking at it as the things that you can't do because the audience isn't there. And I love that people are saying, oh, but we just opened up an entire world of things that we can do that we didn't used to be able to do in so many aspects of it, of, you know, we can interact with people from around the world, which is pretty incredible. What are some of the things that you're thinking about with that, with the circus? Cause like I've seen a handful of like, of those like variety show type things, and it turns into, you know, performers just kind of trying to do their act that works in front of live audiences. And then it's like, oh, it's just like sometimes not quite hitting the mark.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's really nice is one of the performers in our circus ensemble is based in Denver, and she's actually flown out to be in our shows here in the Bay Area and based in San Francisco. But the idea that you can be collaborating with people all over the place and that your casting can diversify in that way is really satisfying, is really neat. And I'm actually seeing a lot of variety shows take advantage of that in particular. The different ways that the audience interacts, like what their presence doesn't contribute because they aren't in the room making noise or creating a social atmosphere, but then what it does contribute, that they can explicitly say things, means that interactions with clowns, comedy performers can be done and handled very differently than they are on stage, which changes the style of comedy, changes the flow of the act, which is really neat. And then something that we're doing with our variety show is, rather than make all of the acts live, pre-recording some of them and treating them basically like music video projects. So if it's an interactive scene and you have a physical comedian or your MC or your musician, you want them to respond to the audience in real time. But if it's something that's more tightly choreographed, like a dance routine, acrobatics, you don't lose as much not having it live, but it does open up the possibility to do a lot of things using camera angles or special effects or the way that you video edit that you couldn't do in a live show. So it adds a cinematic quality that you wouldn't have access to otherwise. So we're trying to kind of split the difference between live acts and edited acts.
Yeah, that's cool. In my the Between Dreams virtual variety show, kind of doing the same thing, and I've been kind of like bringing in having artists submit videos for me to kind of like feature them. And Lisa Marie Burnside, she's an aerialist, and she works with live bands a lot, and it's so cool. That just that alone is really cool, where she's performing to the live band, and they did the independent musicians like filmed and recorded in their spaces. And then she then performed to the song at her space, and it came together. Like she was on screen, and then there was two additional windows, like piano and singing. And it like all came together. And it was almost like, obviously it's not the same as being in there, like hearing a live band and watching the performer, but it was almost more, because I found myself more engaged in the different, sometimes I would be watching the piano player and I was like, oh, I forgot that this was, there's also an aerialist here going on, and it was a really cool thing. It almost brought me more into it because I could be more immersed in it. And it doesn't seem like it should make sense by watching a little, you know, square person playing the piano in the corner, but it worked if it's done right, which was really cool.
Yeah, we're definitely still figuring it out, but just in terms of the thought process, approaching it like, what can I do now that I couldn't do before, is I think a much more liberating creative mindset than focusing on the things that are missing. Because, I mean, on the other hand, you also want to address the specific needs that people have from an event. So this is actually a really nice segue to talking about my thoughts on what I feel is somehow against my intentions is the more developed project, which started as just a complete side project, which was hosting parties online. And I've been looking at a lot of people who are doing at various attempts at getting people together for birthdays or just other social gatherings. And you see like a grid of people on Zoom passing a megaphone back and forth, basically addressing the whole room is sort of the most primitive version of that. But when I'm looking at parties and shows, one thing that seems frequently neglected is creating a shared sense of either immediate experience beyond conversation or atmosphere. Because when you go to a party, you're not just talking to people and making eye contact with them and that's it. Or talking to people and looking at the stage and that's it. You're also walking around in a space and exploring the environment. And I haven't seen many examples of people trying to tackle that yet. And that ended up being the main inspiration behind how I'm approaching digital parties.
So that immediately makes me think of like people are doing the Zoom thing of, hey, one person gets to talk at a time, because that's easy. It's easy to figure out a way that, oh, here, as you said, you have the megaphone, you own this room at this moment, everyone else shut up and wait for your turn. And again, that's not how humans ever interacted in real life, but it's the easiest way to get into a room or a meeting online. So there's certainly some challenges that exist in creating that like space that you are walking through in real life when you don't have the physical space. So how are those things being addressed, and what challenges are you tackling in that, like that physical space aspect that isn't actually there if people are sitting at home?
So this is actually coming back to something that I was interested in doing quite a while ago. Was I became aware of, I went and attended a talk in Oakland years ago by someone who is developing text adventure interactive fiction games, like the multi-user dungeons from the 70s, using an open source software called Twine that is really, really easy to build in, even if you don't particularly have any programming background. So you can just sort of get in and mess around and start making these interactive fiction templates come to life with any content you can think of. And at the time when I first grabbed the software, I didn't really know what to do with it. And so I looked at it for a little while and then put it down. And I picked it up again recently because a friend of mine had a birthday party where to get to the video chat room, you had to solve puzzles and go through a text adventure narrative. It was actually built somewhere else, but it was the same idea. It was an interactive fiction and you would go through it and explore and then get clues and solve a puzzle. And that was sort of the ingress point to the rest of the night. And I really liked it. I looked at it and I thought, these are the things that are really working for me. These are maybe things that I would want to see done differently. Like, it's all very much an experimental playing field, but it really got me thinking. Like, I got very excited by it and remembered that I'd wanted to build things for Twine. And I thought, well, what would I do if I was going to use this software? Instead of making the text adventure just sort of a doorway that you pass through. What if you use that to create the party itself? What if instead of a way of getting there, it was the destination? Mm. And so I've been writing a house. And it's kind of a strange thing to say, but trying to create that type of atmosphere. And so my partner, who's a wonderful writer, has actually been working with me and like editing and helping me build it out. And it's just nice to have a partner in crime on this stuff. But trying to create a space that you can then use as an imaginary landscape that you're navigating in real time with other people and put different types of interaction in different rooms of the house, so that you can go into and out of spaces where there might be a text-only chat component or a video chat component or something else, but having all these different real-time interactions in a space that you navigate as though you are moving through a short book.
Mm. So in a way, and I love that idea, you're writing a room in a thing of like with live theater, traditional live theater experiences, there's a lot of limitations, you know, budgets, space, performers. You know, it's awesome because, you know, you can really have that thing, but there really are a lot of, you know, I've made live theater experiences my whole life and I always had a bit of frustration. I was like, oh man, if I had this budget or this different space, I could make it bigger and I could make this experience more what I imagined in my mind. And now, so going back to the initial thing of now what's available is now you get to create a world that maybe you wouldn't have a warehouse with unlimited budget to create the experience exactly how you saw it in your mind. And now that's available. So that's like a cool thing of thinking back to what's actually available now that wasn't available before.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think if you wanted to go the path of programming a really beautiful website with a visual navigation and illustrating it, you might run into some, you know, constraints there. But because I'm working with something as primitive as text, I'm really leaving this at construction into the minds of my guests.
Yeah.
I'm saying, well, here's what I'm imagining, fill in the blank. But all of a sudden you can write anything, which is really nice. So I'm experimenting with this format. I hope to publish something soon for other people to share with one another. But what it basically is it also runs itself. The video chat program that I'm using is something called Online Town, which solves a lot of the one person with a megaphone problems that Zoom has, which is you have an 8-bit avatar and you navigate with little arrow keys and you can only see and hear the people you're next to, which is amazing because you can actually be in a big room with lots of people and still have what feels like a more private one-on-one conversation, like in the balcony. And only hear each other, but then go walk over to someone else or pop into another conversation very easily. So that feels much more organic. But one of the things I like best about those rooms, you don't download any software. It's browser-based, just like everything that I'm using in the Twine games. And so you just set it up and then leave it there. And for it to become a party, you tell people to meet you in this virtual space. But it's pre-constructed. All of the movements, all of the things that you're using for entertainment. So these are sort of spoilers for what I'm putting out there, but I don't know who's watching this. So there are a lot of things like that. Google Draw, for instance, you can make a collaborative Google Doc that is a text page or a spreadsheet or a doodling page and just have a sketchbook open. And then when guests are there, they can be drawing with each other for the whole night and see like what it evolves into. And that's kind of neat, especially if you're feeling more introverted or low key and don't want to turn your camera on.
Yeah.
Like there are lots of other things you can do. So the other thing I've tried to do with this event is incorporate physical cues from whatever space you're in so that you're doing the same thing in different places, but with one another. So this is actually something that my friend's party did really well. She had a cocktail suggestion and instructions on how to make it. Mine doesn't assume that you have particular ingredients, but actually walks you through looking through your kitchen, finding ingredients that are in your house and making yourself a drink. But it has, you know, little participatory things like that. There are prompts to take a selfie. There are prompts to do a handwritten note. And then cues, if you want to share those back with the rest of the people at the event.
It's cool. That's so cool. And it's like beyond, it's cool for me because I've you know, being in circus, variety show, magic, you know, world for so long, I sometimes feel like I have just been, you know, I think especially lately, I was like, I feel like everyone I've seen it all in, you know, variety shows. And it was like, I don't want to say I was getting frustrated with it, but I felt like a lot of performers just weren't innovating and doing it. They were doing their same old show. And I love this because that just like boggles my mind. Cause I can't even like, I'm like, I have nothing to like compare that to except the Zoom call, which is completely, you know, it's like, I understand a Zoom call or something like this, where I'm like, it's me and one person, but it's very like linear instead of this like adaptive thing. So that's exciting to just be like, oh, there's like, actually I have no idea what that's going to be like. And I have nothing to compare that to really, except how real life is. So that's like for me, that's really cool to be just like, to kind of be like a wrench thrown into my gears of my mind of how things work.
That's awesome. Yeah. I don't know. I kept thinking about all of the things that I wanted out of an online interaction. And I was like, I like video chatting with people, especially when it's, you know, four or fewer, more than that gets kind of cacophonous. But the idea that I could tab around with my little like 8-bit character and meet new people, as well as talking to people that I know and kind of wander through more organically. And then when I was done chatting, usually video chat's really exhausting for me. I don't know what it is, like the uncanny valley of looking between someone's face and the camera or staring someone in the face for an entire conversation. But it feels very high intensity, even though it's remote. And I was thinking about that and I'm like, well, I'll go to one of these video things. And then I really want to tap out after about a half an hour. But at a party, you go take a minute in the bathroom and fix your hair and you make yourself a drink and you look at the way they've decorated the space and you poke around and then you come back to conversation and you kind of, you pet the cat for a little while and then you come back to conversation. And I wanted to make an online space that people could just hang out in and that provided lots of different types of stimulation, so that it wasn't just draining the entire time, in the hopes that people will actually want to stick around and do a whole bunch of different things there depending on where their energy is at any given point in the evening.
Yeah. And that's a nice thing to give, like, cause people need a break, you know, it's like intermission in a show. It's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, this is no matter how awesome the show is, like there's an intermission. Cause like, you just, I need a moment. And then I'm going to be even more excited about it when I come back and get back into it. So that's a cool moment to give where, yeah, like again, like on a video chat meeting, it's like, you can't just get up and walk away. Because exactly. People are like, wait, what? Did they just leave? And let's go back to a bit of your origins. Now it's like, why you're creating these really innovative experiences now, and you've created live experiences before. How did that start? How did you start? Like, you know, it's like, I forget how did we started. I feel like we like linked up on Instagram or something like years ago, just of like.
Wire walking
stuff, because I have the low wire. I'm like not a real, I'm like a fake wire person.
I mean, either you do it or not, right? It's
yeah.
Not a lot
but
of
I don't, practice. But I don't go high up in the air. So like check, let me just show, oh, there it is.
It's a really fun show.
That looks insane.
Thank you.
That's why I say I'm a fake wire artist, because I don't do this. So yeah, talk about this. What's going on here? There's so much happening, and I love, so going back to like bringing people into these immersive experiences, I feel like that's something from what I've seen. I've never actually seen any of your shows in person, so I'm getting like the through the screen version anyway. But from what I've seen a lot of times is this, like, okay, it's not just a black curtain and, hey, look at this trick I'm doing. It's like, hey, let's become part of this story. The audience, the performers, the set design, the lighting, everything makes everything feel like a full experience. So talk a little bit about that, because I think that's relevant to what you're doing with now in these digital spaces.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, how do I even start with this, right? A lot of the work that I do doesn't sit super squarely in any one camp. It's actually one of the things I like about the contemporary circus movement is that it inherently hinges on an integration with modern dance and with theater in a way that like traditional circus in the, I don't know, you go back to like the 40s, was very presentational, was very tricks focused. And there are exceptions, but every time there was an artist that brought in a lot of dance training and dance sort of mentality or theater training and mentality into their work, it really popped. So like the difference between Francis Brunn as a juggler and a lot of other jugglers that preceded him was that he wasn't just virtuosic at object manipulation. He was also an incredible dancer. And he said, my body's on stage too. Let's make that a part of the act. And I think a lot of contemporary circus does this. And certainly my troupe, the Vespertine Circus, does a lot of incorporating dance and theater into all of our shows. So with the theatrical aspect, the shows often have narrative. Our recent shows have been very light on the narrative. They've been more like a thesis and then a presentation of a world, but trying to be transportative and communicate ideas rather than just pretty shapes is definitely at the backbone of what we do. The digital events are the brand new project. So that's something that I started working on a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, maybe. And I'm just doing kind of preliminary beta testing, but I have a Patreon where I'm going to end up posting links to, they're all browser based. They don't need any extra software. You just click over and go. So in order for an event to be live, you just need people to go to the link at the same time. That's it. It runs itself. Which from a host perspective is amazing because it means that all of my homework is pre-event and none of it is during the event. So I can actually just socialize with my friends. But now that I have the base concept and construction, I'm going to be making a bunch of different events where I'm changing the decorating and the styles of interaction and trying to come up with like new narratives and basically take that as a formula and just see how far I can run with it. So I'm going to be publishing some of that stuff and sharing the location with people in the next couple of weeks, and we'll see how it goes. And anything that I post as a project is free. I post everything publicly. And then just if you want to kick some bucks in my hat, I certainly appreciate it. Like many artists, I am not really working right now. So my life was producing events. So trying to move that online and in a way that has legitimate value and is really satisfying for people is most of what I'm thinking about these days.
Yeah. Here's right. Your Patreon, right?
Yeah, there we go. And that wasn't just for Twine events. It was kind of a catch-all. So I do a lot of sound design that ends up on there. So I will make really specifically prompted Spotify playlists because sound design is one of my favorite parts of world building. So actually all of the events that I do come with playlists that at some point you get linked to. Like when you arrive at the building, there's music playing and then you can tab over and there'll be a playlist for that environment. So that's part of the design.
Cool. I love how, first of all, I love the voluntary participation in the tip thing, because it sometimes gets, especially now in Patreon, people are like, oh, I'll do something cool if you give me money first. And I'm like, well, I love street artists and street performers because they do something cool and then earn the value, and the audience gets to decide what value it is. And I think that ultimately makes entertainment be better and makes entertainers think about how to keep their audience happy, because they're just going to either leave and or not keep supporting them. So they have to either get better or stop doing it. And that's great.
Quite a hustle. That's actually where I started with street performing.
Yeah. And so how do you think some of that, so to double down on that, how is that kind of ground level, and I think we just addressed that, but are there other aspects of, you know, that you call on and now in this world that's a completely different, you're like, man, I'm glad I had that terrible day of street performing because I learned this new experience, or I'm glad I had that awesome day of street performing because I learned this experience?
I mean, I think probably two of the greatest teachers that I've had in my whole entertainment career, if not the two greatest teachers that I've had, was the street performing that I started when I was 15. is a living statue in San Francisco, which you could write a book about living statue experiences. And it would be very exciting. So a lot of anecdotes, but also just a lot of hard and fast lessons, right? Like you have to invent the stage. There isn't one. So how do you have stage presence? How do you command attention? How do you be interesting? And then dealing with other street performers and kind of learning how different styles work. I'm actually very fortunate because as much as I'm in the public making things and performing on wire, I'm not a barker. And a lot of acts really require a lot of skill at barking, and living statue is a bit more about being a visual spectacle and not about grabbing attention with your voice, which is an advantage for me and my temperament. But the other kind of best teacher that I had was that I was a children's entertainer, and that's really sink or swim. You go to a birthday party and you're like, I have 35-year-olds and I have 90 minutes with them. They're not gonna mess around. Like, be entertaining or quit, basically. Yeah. And, you know, I was doing that 6 times a weekend when I was first starting up the circus, and then doing nightclub gigs as an aerialist Friday and Saturday nights often. So I would be performing in 8 different locations in 1 week, often in 8 different costumes.
Yeah.
5-year-olds and drunks mostly.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that's a switch that you have to flip from kids' parties to nightclubs.
Not as different as you might think. Yeah. People joke about that, but there are a lot of the same skills. And so I think that the things that I learned having to be like quick on my feet and come up with on the fly solutions and difficult audiences and constantly changing environments definitely informed the way that I think about making things now. And street performing and the accessibility of street performing and the kind of people whose attention that you do and don't get, as opposed to when you put everything behind a paywall, is something that I really value because I think that the audience always informs my work. And so getting more people's eyes on it helps me polish what it is that I'm building. That said, total respect for people who do put things behind a paywall, and different models work to feed different people, like do what you can to get by. But when it comes to my Patreon, I feel more comfortable passing a hat if everything that I'm making is going to also be accessible for the people who can't afford to contribute.
Yeah, it's great. I think I kind of grazed over it earlier and I didn't want to, but just the idea of how clear the vision of like what's important to you as an entertainer, as a curator of people's experiences. And I've been kind of playing with that idea of like, once you build the lens of how you want to create things and how you want to make things happen, the decisions become very easy of what actions to take. Like, it's very clear to you that one person can't be talking at a time. It needs to be, you get to choose these things. And I think that's really cool. And especially in like, oh, this just, I just started working on this not very long ago. And it's like, it feels so clear. Like, people are like, I want to see things that you've done. And it's like, oh no, I'm just like, it's being figured out in the moment, but it feels so clear. Like, it already exists because you have such a clear image and vision of it in your mind.
Yeah. It's just something, once I started thinking about it, I really couldn't put down. Trying to reach for, I mean, I'm very inspired by the things that I miss. What do I want right now? I'm stuck at home, like everybody's stuck at home, and I'm used to spending a lot of time working with other people and playing with other people, seeing my friends and making these events happen. And I'm like, what do I miss most about events? And then from a curmudgeonly experience, like, and what would I be repelled by in an online event? Like, if I felt like I had to be on camera or leave the event, I'm not going to stay very long. Hmm. And so thinking about the things from a perspective both of how do I satisfy what I'm craving, and then how do I make it easy to be there even when I'm really low energy, even when I'm finding it really hard to keep up with all the software that people want me to install for chatting. You know, right out of the gates, I was like, browser-based, no extra software. I don't want to ask people to download things. If I can help it, I don't want to ask people to register anywhere. And if I can help it, I'd like to only use encryption in chat platforms. So like, how do you address privacy and ease of use and make it really simple, make the bar for buy-in really, really low, and then also try to find something satisfying. And that's just been, those have been like the main guiding principles, is ease of engagement and getting something out of it that feels like it has memorability and depth.
Recapping on what you just said is like the clearer that the creator and curator has of that initial plan of what you're making, the easier it is for the audience to know what they're going to get and the easier it is for them to voluntarily participate. It's like a magic show. It's like scary to participate in some magic shows because you're like, I don't know what I'm signing up for and I'm afraid I'm going to get made a fool of if I go up there on the stage. But some performers and some magicians and some whatever that use volunteers make them like, hey, here's the expectations. It's going to be safe and welcoming for you to come up on stage. I'm not going to make a fool of you. And then people are more likely to go volunteer. And I think that's what's really cool. Again, doubling down on that of like your vision is so clear and you're just laying out the expectations. This is exactly what you're going to get. Because it is hard to go do something new, especially alone. And you're like, I don't know. It's going to be scary, maybe, if I just go to this new thing that I don't know about. So it's cool to give people that safe, super safe thing. And it's like, especially now, people are like looking for that interaction and they might not go to a party alone normally. And now they have the ability to participate in that in a even safer environment than I don't like saying than in normal times, because like this is normal times now.
I think the not knowing what you're going to get is actually part of why it's so exhausting to go to online events right now. Because yeah. I've been examining that and I'm like, I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to get dressed. Why is this tiring for me to just look at? And it's because all of it's unfamiliar. And the first time you do something and the less you know about it, the more mental math you're doing. Right? The more you're kind of processing going into it and can psych yourself out. And so I think that the first few ones of these, I'm really just writing on like people's good faith in my intentions and ability to like make something okay. Specifically like catering to the people who I have a personal relationship with. And then as it gains momentum and people are like, all right, I know what to expect. I know what this is going to be. They'll get less and less tiring to attend. Just like your first time driving to a new location feels like it takes longer. So I think that's part of what's making attending online events hairy to begin with, is that they're all new. They're all a first try. And unless you're going to one host or one producer's, you know, fifth event in a row, like if you've really been on it with a particular pot of people, that's less tiring. But if you're just sort of scanning through Facebook at everyone's first try looks radically different. So it feels a little like roulette.
What else do you have? Anything else that you want to tie into that to leave people with? Or if not, the Patreon is there to help support things that are happening. Stuart says, yes, super clear and informative. I was on a call last night with Stuart. I was helping him work on some live streaming virtual show and entertainment solutions as well. So that's cool that he's been hopping back in. But yeah, do you have any other thoughts or anything to tie that up, or where to find more of your stuff, and how people are curious now and they want to see more. So where's the best place besides that Patreon? We'll throw.
The charities are going up on Patreon and the show will be posted on Vespertine Circus when it's ready. It's just still very much a work in progress. I'm figuring out like what's the best way to make this happen and capitalize on the ways that it is unique in positive ways, because it's digital rather than focusing on the things that are missing. So there's a lot of like experimentation and thinking through still happening, but Patreon for parties for now. I might put up another website that's just dedicated to that, but right now there isn't a dedicated website for it, and Vespertine Circus for shows.
Cool. There it is, patreon.com. Look at that. We got it. All right, cool. Thank you so much for sharing all of these things. We chatted last week and I was like, I want to dig deeper into the cool things that you're working on. And I think that it's like got my brain spinning on new ideas and things. And I know there's lots of people who are like thinking about this stuff right now. So it's cool to like kind of, again, throw these gears and these wrenches of people who are kind of maybe thinking in certain ways, and to open up new ways of thinking is really valuable. So appreciate you sharing all your stuff and looking forward to seeing some of the new experiences that are happening.
Awesome. Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me.
All right. See you guys later. Thanks everyone for watching, listening.